Good evening, gang. Welcome to another exciting edition of Tube Talk. Henderson Stomp, and isn't that a great way to kick off a program? Yes, folks, it's Friday night. This is Tube Talk on WRCA 1330 AM, the program for the vintage electronics and great music lovers that still exist out there. Every Friday, I come up from the subways here in the city of Boston, the hub of the universe. And if you don't think we're dedicated to this program here, I would tell you, come up to Boston, take a ride on the subway on a 90-plus degree day, and breathe in the essence that truly is Boston, and you'd be amazed that I actually stay on the train long enough to get over here to Cambridge, Mass., home of WRCA, home of Tube Talk. And you know, friends, have you spent hours upon hours of electronic restoration work on that classic radio that you found? Do you wish to complete that vintage look? We would humbly suggest that you check out the grill cloth at richmonddesignsinc.com to complete that set and finish it properly. richmonddesignsinc.com has the cloth for your Philco Zenith or other very fine set. You can also check out some of the other nifty radios that Kenny has worked on and brought back to life. You can peek into the workshop of a master craftsman. So please check out richmonddesignsinc.com for your grill cloth needs. It is imperative that we support the folks who provide us with quality furnishings to complete our radio projects. Isn't it now? I think so.
You've seen him up and down the avenue, and now he's wearing the navy blue. She had a tear in the corner of her eye as he said his last goodbye. Shoo, 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 baby. Shoo, 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 baby. Bye, 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 baby. Da-da-day. Your papa's off to the seven seas. Don't cry, baby. Don't sigh, baby. Bye-bye.
live a life of ease. Seems kinda tough now to say goodbye this way. But Papa's gotta be rough now so that he can be sweet to you another day. Bye, 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 baby. Don't cry, baby. Shoo, 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 baby. To the seven seas. Shoo, baby. Do-da-do-day. Shoo, baby. Do-da-do-day. Shoo, baby. Shoo, shoo. Quiet, I want a little bit of quiet in the house, please.
She wants a little bit of quiet in the house.
My papa's on his way across the seven seas, so don't you cry, don't you sigh goodbye. Now shoo, shoo, baby. Shoo, 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 my baby. A tall papa's off to the seven seas.
Seems kinda tough now to say goodbye this way. But papa's gotta be rough now so that he can be sweet to you another day. Shh, baby. Shh, baby. Shoo, 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 baby. Goodbye, goodbye. Your papa's off to the seven seas. Seven seas, your big tall papa's off to the seven seas.
And that's a 1956 recording, the Andrews Sisters, and boy, I tell you, they just got better and better. Shoo Shoo Baby. You know, let me ask you all something. Ever feel that the world is not interested you any longer because you're getting a little older? Yes, that's right. We are the men in the white, short-sleeved dress shirts in the summer, sitting in the diner, still clutching our newspapers, our coffee steaming our nose hairs. We are the women who occasionally may still put a curler in our hair, wearing keds. Kerchiefs, anyone? Well, you know, we hear that the demographic that the madmen admin want to cater to is the all-important 18 to 35 group. Those are the people who we want to sell to, cater to, market to, and design for. And you know, oddly enough, from what I hear, this is the group that is moving home in record numbers, can't find jobs, and are being crushed by debts. Well, not to say that that's all their fault either. They have little, if any, equity, not to mention not much cash on hand. So not to downplay their place in the world, why are they so highly sought after as an audience? Well, you know, perhaps it's because that despite their faux sophistication and social networking savvy, they're still young enough to be manipulated by the mass marketers. No ad man or corporate executive who is turning their back on the older set is going to look a 50-something in the eyes and say, "We just don't care about you anymore." They'll tell you you're a technophobe, an old fogey. The ratings aren't good enough on that music or TV show you like. Those TV shows nobody watches anymore, etc., 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 as Yul Brynner would say. They'll marginalize you and smear you as an old-timer, even though you are still young by modern standards. You know, so it is easier to walk away from us than to say, look, we don't feel we can rip you off as easy as the young ones, because I think really that's what it comes down to. But, folks, you can relax. There is always Tube Talk. We cater to those who love the vintage life, classic radios, great music, and civil conversation. We will always be here for the guys and gals who are today's senior set, those of us in our nifty 50s and on up. Oh boy, what a thought that is. But you know, having said that all, I feel a little better already.
Thank you. saying that I'm in a crazy kind of a daze, a lazy sort of a haze. When I go walking, I hear people talking. They say our affair is not just a passing phase, and they whisper about the flowers you keep sending me by the dozen, and they wonder about the hours that you spend with me. It keeps them buzzing, rumors are flying. I'm not denying that people are sure I'm falling in love with you. Cause for a change, darling, all the rumors are true. Rumors are flying, and I'm not denying that people are sure with you. Cause for a change, darling, all the rumors are true.
Don't listen to those rumors, folks. They're not true. Well, you know, before we head down to the comfy, cozy radio parlor for tonight's guest, let's sneak one more in. Here's a very interesting Vegas couple, Louis Prima and Keely Smith. David Boyle from the Colorado Radio Collectors Antique Radio Club. David is a charter member and present president of the Colorado Radio Collectors Club. He's an avid collector and restoration guy, and we're happy to have you on board. David, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
It's certainly my pleasure, Paul. I hope to be able to measure up to those people who have, been on your honor roll, and I'll endeavor to do that.
Sounds like we're joining the Marines here, but don't worry. It's a lot easier than Paris Island. So, you know, David, as we do with most guests, we always ask, how did you get started? How did you get interested in the world of electronics? What turned you on to getting into the hobby?
Well, Paul, I have a story that sounds like it came out of the Reader's Digest in 1950s.
I love those.
It's factual, and I just love telling it when I get a question like that. Back during World War II, I was a kid growing up in Los Angeles, and that after World War II, I had this interest in technology. I didn't know it at the time, but I had a little red wagon. And after World War II, I was going around the neighborhood on trash can day, and people every once in a while threw out their old radios from the 1930s, 1920s, things that they'd had to patch up and maybe not even get repaired during the war.
Sure.
The new radios were coming out after the war. They were smaller, they were better, they were Bakelite, they were affordable. And I would take those radios home into my dad's little shop in the garage and use some of his basic tools and take them apart, not knowing what the heck I was doing. But I was enthralled by them. And, of course, we had our own family radio. And I remember looking in the back of that and seeing all those tubes light up. And it was something I just didn't understand. They would get hot, and yet there was good sound coming out of that radio. Well, after the war, about 2 years later on, my older brother, who was a pilot in the war, finally came home. He got mustered out, and that he brought out his crystal sets that he'd made in the 1930s and showed me how to use those crystal sets. And here I am about 7 or 8 years old and with the earphones, and that just kind of started the hobby. And from then on, I started learning about radio and the Cub Scouts. We had a project where we built a simple radio out of a kit that we had to buy. And then in the Boy Scouts, the Radio Merit Badge, you know, we built some more radios, and that was the beginning of this. And then I started doing a lot of work in the 1950s, just fooling around with things myself as an experimentalist. The Popular Electronics Magazine first issue came out in October 1954, and I saw that at the local drugstore, and I picked that up and bought that. And there was a project in there that I wanted to build. It was called Capacity Operated Relay. And I went down to the radio and TV supply store on my bicycle, bought all those parts, wound my own coil, and then I was off in electronics. It would bit me very hard. And later on in life, as older, I graduated out in Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, California State Polytechnic University in electronics, and have worked the aerospace industry. And during my college career, I worked in the local radio and TV repair shop. That got me a pretty good boost, and here I am today. And that's how I started my hobby.
It's interesting, you know. These a lot of guys do start out as sort of the original recyclers. You know, I had on a fellow. I had mentioned to him before we came on, Ross, and he has a story. It was an RCA communications receiver that I guess is fairly hard to come by. And he told a story about how he convinced his dad, it was in the winter, to take him down to the dump in his pickup truck because he had saw it down there. So he goes down there with a friend who thought he was absolutely crazy, and they saved the thing. And later on, it wound up getting away from him somehow. But, you know, that urge to see something play again is it's always a challenge, you know, for somebody who's mechanically inclined to do it. And you make a good point, too. I don't think many people in our generation today understand, especially after World War II, when many people were exposed to electronics and radio and radar and sonar in the war, whether it was, you know, they were in the Navy or in the Air Force or in the Signal Corps, you know, they got exposed to electronics. So after the war, not only is the economy growing, then you get these magazines and with all these projects. So not only are they radio projects, build a radio, build an amplifier, you know, build an automatic garage door opener. I mean, you read these old magazines, you know, you see at the swap meets. And to be an amateur electronic guy was a very cool thing, especially if you're a teenage boy in the 50s and the 60s. And, you know, a lot of those guys did get, you know, later involved in component stereo and repair work and follow into TV repair and all of that stuff. So it was kind of a cool place to be, and I think we underestimate that, you know, just how big a mark, you know, it left on a lot of people in those days. Now, How did you get started with the current version of the Colorado Club? You're a charter member, so how did you guys put things together and get this whole show started out there?
That was an interesting thing. In 1976, I was visiting an antique store downtown Denver, and I happened to see this old RCA, which turned out to be a Model 120 Cathedral, and I said, "You know something?" I said to myself, and I said to the person who was with me, "Someday I'm going to get back into old radio, and I'm going to have old radio, old phonographs, television, etc., as a hobby when I get the time and the money." And I bought that radio from Grandpa's Antiques on South Broadway in Denver in 1976 for $80, which was my first radio.
Very cool.
I stored. And since that, and then I said, "Okay, someday I'm going to get into this." Well, a good friend of mine I work with in the aerospace business, also an electronics fellow and an amateur radio, he and I decided to go to a flea market once on a Saturday, and this would be back in 1985. And we just picked up some junker radios for a couple of bucks each and took them to our respective shops, got them working, got them all polished up and whatever they needed to be done, and then we decided to go out and look for some more. When we were out looking for some more in the next year or so, we ran across other people, other guys that were looking for old radios. Pretty soon we had a quorum, if you will.
Sure.
And we all met in a fellow's basement workshop one day, and some of the people there came from a club that was started in Denver and flourished sometime back in the 1970s. It was more of an antique wireless paraphernalia type club.
I see.
With some old radios thrown into it. Anyway, we started the club in 1987, and at the moment we have about 90-plus members. So that's the kind of history there. That's the radio that started it, and that's how we started collecting, you know, one radio, then two radios, three radios, and pretty soon, you know, unfortunately, we've learned that our wives can count, so then we learned how to sneak radios into the house.
That's right. The brown paper bags and the wrappers and the garage, the mysterious packages out there in the garage, that's right. Don't touch that box. I know exactly what's in it.
You've heard those stories before.
That's a very common theme. We've heard those. Now, I know you guys have some regular meetings, and you meet in Castle Rock, and you meet in Littleton, and I think there's an auction that you do as well. Are the meetings sort of regular informational meetings? Is the auction the big event you guys have?
Yes, the auction, we have two large events. Generally at the end of March, that last Sunday in March, the last venue for about 5 years has been the Colorado-Denver area Vintage Voltage Expo. And we piggyback onto that big expo, and we're at the Ramada Inn North in the Denver area, and we put on a show in the atrium there, and we just love that. We get a lot of public that comes through there to go to the Vintage Voltage Expo, and they see our radios because they have to go through our atrium, if you will, in order to get into the big, huge convention hall where all the booths are set up and all the people are selling old electronic paraphernalia. So we've done very well at that show. And we have a judging. We have a people's votes that go for the best People's Choice Awards. And then we have an event that's generally the last Sunday of September at a really nice venue. It's a park-like setting. It's a company where one of the fellows used to work and is retired from. And they let us use their pavilion, their barbecue, and their facility.
Very nice.
Et cetera. And we put on an auction and a barbecue. And that barbecue is free to all the club members and their families.
Oh, that's super. That sounds like a nice day.
Barbecue, I have for years. I started it. I like food. What the heck, you know? So
makes sense.
Cook a lot of hamburgers, cook a lot of hot dogs, and have a really fine auction.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, you know, and I like that Vintage Voltage name for an event because Reddy Kilowatt is one of my heroes.
That's right. That was like the Edison Company or one of those companies.
I think. Yeah. I have a friend up in Wisconsin who has all kinds of memorabilia. Very nice man. He's kind enough. He sent me a Reddy Kilowatt tie tack and a pin for my hat, and I knew how it arrived in this hobby when I got those things.
We all have our favorite little icons.
I know we do. Now, how do you guys do out there? One of the challenges we have, and you hear about in some of the other clubs, and we're working on it up here in New England, do you guys find recruiting younger people a challenge? Do you have some younger members? And, hey, younger today is in the 50s and 40s, so how does your club break out? Do you have more old-timers or youngsters or a good blend?
Well, unfortunately, most of the old-timers, as we have known them, the people that really worked on radios, if you will, in the 1940s and 1950s, or were associated with the manufacturing or design end, those fellows are pretty well fading out, just like the heroes of World War II. our generation, we are losing them in our club, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Just the small group that hang together of about, if we'd all had lived and were active, we'd have about 20 people out of the club of 90-plus people where we would meet on, and we do meet on Wednesdays, every Wednesday for the last 20 years, and go off and have lunch together.
Sure.
And do some sort of activity generally. But we're no longer 20, and we could never have been 20, because over the years, we've lost five of those guys,
strictly
just to cancer alone.
Yeah.
And now to answer your question, we do have some younger members in the club. Unfortunately, not enough. Most of the people in the club these days, I guess they're considering my age, and I'll be 74 in a couple months. We do have younger people that are in their 50s, so there is a succession plan.
Well, that's good.
And we work at that. Okay, we do recruit. We recruit at our shows. We have flyers that go out for the show. There's a lot of advertisement, so we have a little flyer we give away to people who come into the show in March and tell about the club and give them some contacts, give them a copy of our periodical that comes out every other month, which is called The Flash. And that's how we recruit. And plus, it's word of mouth, too.
Yep.
So we do have a sustained roughly between 90 and 95 people.
Well, that's a pretty good group. Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too. You mentioned Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts, and I believe they have since stopped this, but not too long ago, I think even, in what would say is the modern era, I think there was an electronics badge that you could get in the Boy Scouts. And I know some clubs, tried to reach out and say, hey, look, we can help you with this. You know, we can help you get your badge, and then have a little clinic, and then show the kids something about, you know, maybe pick a 4 or 5 tube set that's not too complex, and you try to get at least their foot in the door. There was a nice story, one of our shows not too long ago, a couple of years back, I saw a fellow, probably in his, maybe in his 50s, and he was a friend of one of the other guys in the club. He brought his son, who was probably about 14, with him. And, you know, as sometimes things happen at the show, some guy says, hey, you know, I'm packing up here. Do you want, this is free. Do you want this kid? So he took a little, fairly simple silver tone with him, and he went out the door, and it was with his dad, and he said, he's going to work on that. He told me he was going to work on it. So anyway, a couple months later, we see him again, and I'll be darned, he figured it out. He changed out a couple of capacitors. I think he needed a new tube. He had to change the line cord. It was pretty old. Now, he didn't do a full class grade A restoration on it, but you know what? He had a big smile, because he was probably one of the only kids on his block, probably in the only city, who worked on an electronic device himself, took something that didn't work, and could make it work. And he, there's a certain feeling you get with that, and I'm sure you know that feeling when you resurrect a dead set. And if you can get that into a kid, you never know. He could be signing up, You
right.
could put him on the list.
The term there that we would use, if I was in the educational business, would be inculcate. And we do have a mentoring program in our club. One of the approaches that I take and some of us take is that when we generate articles for our local club Flash, we put technical articles in there. And I wrote a series of technical articles over the years strictly to give radio theory an application to how to repair old radios. I always try to draw analogies between what they're learning in terms of some simple theory of, let's just say, tune circuits or generally audio circuits or RF circuits or intermediate frequencies, how to define intermediate frequencies, where they get generated, and then apply that to what you might find in an old radio. Just like when I've done articles like just on capacitors, and then here's what you're looking for. Here's some of the causes of a radio failure due to various failure modes, a coupling capacitor, a bypass capacitor, a filter capacitor, that sort of thing. So we have when the new people come into the club, they don't feel like they're left out.
Sure.
We actually have had some classes before. We haven't done this for quite a while, where we'll actually have people bring their radios in, and we'll go through them and show them how to align it with a signal generator and a voltmeter, as an example.
Yeah, that's great that you can do that. As one of the older guys in our club told me once, he goes, a lot of people can repair a radio, but he said, a great repairman is a guy who knows some theory. He said, you can be really dangerous if you know some theory, too. But, those are the guys, too, who have a lot of fun with homebrew projects and kind of take things a little bit beyond just working on, you know, the commercially sold sets of the 30s and 40s. Now, David, bear with us here just a moment. We are going to hit the pause button here for just a minute and remind you all that this is Tube Talk on WRCA 1330 AM. I am your host, Paul Burish. Our guest tonight is David Boyle from the Colorado Radio Collectors Antique Radio Club. And you can visit the Colorado Club at RadioAce.com. I love that, RadioAce.com, if you want to find out a little bit more about the goings-on out there in Colorado. Now, moving right along here, I know you are the Dave from Dave's Old Radio Repair and Servicing, and you cover that whole Rocky Mountain region out there. How's business? Do you find people still want to get their vintage radios repaired?
No, it's twofold, Paul. First of all, the part A of that is that in the club, we have a lot of people who have some ability to repair radios, and then we have those who have no ability, but yet they collect radios.
Sure.
From the time they want them repaired. Now, breaking that down is the people who repair radios sometimes get a challenge, and they look to me or a few of us in the club to help them with their challenges. So that's where I get involved with some of the more sophisticated sets, the multi-bands, the motor-driven Zeniths, with the shutter dials, things like that, where or the large Brunswicks. I mean, you can go on and on with the, you know, with the all-wave band radios, the large table and console radios, 1930s. But then on the other side of that, there's people out there, believe it or not, that can call me probably at least two or three times a month with an heirloom that they've discovered, and they want to get it fixed to pass
sure.
it on to their younger kids.
I understand.
Because the younger kids, or even their kids in their 40s, don't even understand what tube radio might have been or what it's all about. So I do a lot of family heritage radios. I call it family heritage because one way or the other, they've been in the family for years, or they picked up another radio that their father may have had, and they found a model similar to the one, and they would like to get that working as a reminisce, you know, to yesteryear.
Sure, it's a nice keepsake and a link back. And, you know, there's a lot of mystery surrounding these things, too, as they get a little older and a little harder to find. You know, to your point earlier, you see the tubes light up, and then you start wondering, well, gee, I wonder what programs, you know, whoever owned this listened to, and how much time did they listen to it. And I always wonder when I get, because usually on my radios, cosmetic, you know, imperfections that I wind up getting, I always wonder, What drink left that water ring on top of the cabinet? Was he a Scotch man or was he a bourbon guy?
Okay.
But
we know a lot of cigarette burns and a lot of rings. Okay?
I know. It's
people put plants on top of them, and then they would leach through into the wood, you know, that sort of thing. We see it all, and every radio does have a story, and that finish and the look of the cabinet has a certain patina to it. That I try to tell people, you know, if that's a family radio, we don't want to make that new again. We want to refurbish it electronically, and you can clean and polish it up a little bit, put some old English scratch remover
sure,
on it.
Sure, sure.
Really going to have a much better treasure that represents what that radio went through for all these years, and yet it sounds so nice and warm when you listen to it.
I hear you. Now, have you had anything interesting come across your bench lately? I saw a little bit of an article that you were writing. I believe if I've got my model number right here, it was an RCA 57A, and it looked
that's,
like a beast of a set.
Come and gone. There's been so many. I think what really gives me the challenge, and I don't want to get off subject, but is some of the old phonographs and some of the old changers. They're a whole skill in itself. So when people bring me consoles, not only do they want the radio to work well, but they would expect that changer works
sure.
well, too. And we all know that they're just really difficult to work on. You certainly can't get any parts for it. I do have some people across the United States that will rebuild the rubber parts, and there's other people where you can get rebuilt cartridges because those old Rochelle crystal cartridges have all reverted back to the crystalline form and do no longer function at this age. But so there's a lot of challenges there. But I can't recall, except for one radio that a fellow brought me that was an RCA from the 1920s, and it was a radio phonograph, one of the first AC-driven phonograph motors. It was an optional as opposed to the wind-up.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so complex that you could actually record off the radio at a 78 RPM speed, because it had a recording head also.
Yep.
And indeed, you could actually had a microphone where you put the selector switch in a position where you could actually transcribe.
Oh, that's cool. Very cool.
This was an actual doctor that I knew, and he had the books, and it turned out to be a heck of a project where he searched the internet, you know, for certain parts for me over about a year span. I would bring it out. But it was a magnificent project. And when you go to his home now, and he's a phonograph collector primarily, but that's a treasure that he likes, because every function on that radio now works. He can record. You can get the old blanks. He got to hold a bunch of blanks somewhere so he can actually transcribe. But the main thing is that it sounds still good, and it's a magnificent, beautiful, very ornate cabinet.
Yeah, that's great. That's now, you know, it's interesting too. Well, a couple of things here I have to throw in. You talk about the anything with a record player or a record changer. I have to say, you know, you say that to people and they kind of say, "Huh, yeah, it's a record player." Well, the first time I saw a Cobra-matic tone arm with a pair of eyes looking at me, I said, "Wow. I mean, these record players are really cool. I mean, look at this. They even took some time to come up with a really sharp design for the tone arm." But and you mentioned that this particular set, and it was an early one, could record. And hopefully, within the next couple of weeks, I'm going to have on a very interesting guest. And she spent a good deal of time researching people who were listening to shortwave and making reports back to people here in the U.S. Her name is Lisa Spahr, and she should be a great guest. But one of the things that I didn't really think too much about, but she was saying, you know, not only did people listen to shortwave from these foreign countries to try to pick up news, many of them would record it, because if they had a technically evolved enough set that they could record, they would make recordings of the programs. They would listen to the records over and over again, because if shortwave reception wasn't very good, to try to pick out details. Did I understand that name right? Was it Hoyle or was it Boyle? You know, where did they say the person lived? Because, you know, part of the other part of the program is they would try to let relatives know here at home. And I just was like, wow, you know, people would put that much time and energy into that type of a project. You know, it really goes to speak about the character of some of those folks, you know, from that greatest generation. But in any event, back to radios. Do you have a particular type or brand of radio that you like to collect, or is it just if something looks unique and it's a challenge and it's a involved set, does that get you moving towards acquiring it, or are you like a Philco or a Zenith? Is there anything in particular that's a hot button with you, David?
Yes, I do have my favorites, as everybody in any kind of hobby has their favorites. I've got three favorites, and each one is for an individual characteristic. First of all, I'm going to mention Philco. Philco, starting with their first Baby Grand Cathedral in the early 1930s, just overwhelmed in terms of sales the rest of the industry. They became the predominant largest manufacturer of radios in the United States and maintained that for a number of years. They sold, in the height of the Depression, they sold a radio for $19.95, a four-tube superhet that you didn't have to go out and buy batteries for. It plugged in. You didn't have to buy tubes. The tubes already came with the radio. The speaker came with the radio. It was all under one roof, so to speak. And because that Philco became so prolific and the largest manufacturer of radios in the world, there's a lot of Philcos out there. So, yes, I have a lot of Philco radios. I do a lot of Philco work. And I haven't talked to Ron Ramirez, who's Mr. Philco here in America, for quite some time, for a number of years, as a matter of fact. But when I talked to him years ago, I was on the quest to acquire as many Philco Baby Grand models as possible. And I don't know, but argumentally, I probably have the largest collection of anybody that I've ever talked to, or anybody knows anybody about Philco radios, of Baby Grand, all restored Baby Grand Cathedrals, each one a different part number.
Yeah,
I've got about 33 of them. There's only a couple I don't have, and I've given up on those.
You know, I know a lot of people who just love the build quality of a lot of that early Philco stuff, too.
Philcos are very robust, okay? They had very circuits that had a lot of tolerance to them, and so as the parts aged, their circuit design parameters that the engineers took into effect allowed for a lot of that aging without hurting the performance or providing for some sort of audio distortion. So I think I give my hats off to Philco. But as far as the technology now of radios, I have to take my hats off to RCA. RCA and maybe somewhere along the line, Zenith too, but RCA is my second most favorite of radios. they made a wide variety of radios across the spectrum, and they were always very well engineered, because RCA, under David Sarnoff, had developed the RCA laboratories, and those laboratories led the world in circuitry, and they bought up the patents. As you know, they bought up patents from the Armstrong patent for Super Heterodyne. Before then, they brought up the regenerative patents, then the super regenerative, and then the FM, you know, circuitry. They bought those patents out and developed their own. So then there's Atwater Kent. Atwater Kent excelled in providing for the automotive industry during the 1910s, just about 100 some years ago. Just about 100 years ago, they excelled in making Bakelite castings for automotive ignition components. Castings that included metal parts in very high, very good tolerance, if you will, in terms of manufacturing processes. They got into the radio business back in the 1920s, and they came up at one time, made a lot of good radios. And I treasure my Atwater Kent radios, because they're, each one's a masterpiece, both in design and construction, the woodwork, and the actual chassis themselves.
Now,
so I really, really do admire the Atwater Kent radios. The story of Atwater Kent is a story that people should be able to get off the internet, because it's a wonderful story.
Yeah, fascinating character, and somebody who didn't want to compete with the little, you know, midget radios, and said, you know what, if I'm not going to be able to make the kind of stuff I want to make and have people, you know, be willing to purchase it, I'll wrap it up.
And he did. He did that by 1937.
Yep. Interesting character.
Last radios. I have some very treasured radios of Atwater Kent are restored. And just as an honorable mention, I'm going to mention a couple of model numbers. One of them is a 555 treasure chest that I got. Literally, the cabinet was in splinters, but I accepted that. I paid for it, and it got mailed to me. And I, piece by piece, I put that cabinet back together, stripped off the old black paint that somebody put on it, got down to beautiful walnut veneer with inset inlays. And that radio, I did an article on back years ago. I took pictures as I went, because every part of that radio, I completely stripped the chassis and started over again and built it up from there. Another Atwater Kent that's a favorite it was one of those all-wave radios from Marsh.
Yep.
Radio from the 1930s, multi-band, very complex tuner in it in terms of changing, kind of like analogous to a Zenith shutter dial. When you actually change the band, you actually change the entire scale factor the groove, or we would call it kind of a peephole, but it's more than that. It's actually just a semicircle where the band frequency changes with the band. And it has a built-in, very primitive single-strength meter. It's a shadow graph-type meter. And the cabinet, when it was brought to me, was a junker. I paid $15 for it, for just the tubes, but the fellow who sold it to me from the club, he thought it couldn't be restored. And I rebuilt that cabinet because it was crushed in. It had been in a garage somewhere, and redid the veneer on it as needed. And that's probably my most favorite radio. It was one that won a restoration prize for that year. And I've got several radios where I won the best restoration, but I don't compete really anymore. I get more involved with helping to run the show as somebody to help manage the show as opposed to just showing radios.
Now, one final question here, not to cut you short, but the clock is ticking here, as it always does. Is that the radio that you would say is your favorite, that you'd have to take with you for the desert island when we strand you, or is there another one that we should know of that you, could not part with? What's the one you have to have?
If I was going to go to a desert island, there wouldn't be any power. So I would take a radio that I have in my collection, but it's a new radio, fairly new. It's self-powered. You wind it up, or it's solar-powered, both. It's AM and FM, and it works strictly by either solar or by wind-up power. But getting back to less of a cute answer, the radio I would take with me to a desert island would be one of my Zenith Transoceanics.
That's a perfect choice.
Battery-powered. They're all wave, and they're extremely sensitive, and they're a world-class radio from the 1940s and 50s.
No, I like that choice. That's a good answer, and it's a very practical answer, and you probably would have been the first person on an island listening to one either. And I was also very pleased that you mentioned RCA. You know, sometimes RCA gets overlooked, and I'm not quite sure why. I know a lot of people from an engineering point of view always speak highly of RCAs. I have a beast of an old RCA that's just lying fallow right now. We haven't done anything with it in my garage that probably represents a lot of engineering out of Camden. But I have this weakness for 6-tube AC-DC post-war RCAs, and some of the other collectors look at me like I'm nuts. But, you know, they're fairly small. They sound very good. They're excellent for AMDXing. And, you know, I can't say enough about them. I haven't really had one that's ever turned out to be a clunker, though I have one that I think just needs a little bit more work to get the sensitivity down and the sound a little bit better. But they just put out a consistent quality product, and they had it down pat. And it was only until, you know, things started to get value engineered and shipped overseas that they really started to struggle. So all I can say, David, is it's been a treat to have you on the show tonight. We will certainly have you back and pick a good topic some night, and maybe as we head into the fall or winter here, we'll sit around the radio parlor again and have a nice chat. David Boyle from the Colorado Radio Collectors Antique Club, thanks very much for being on. We appreciate it. Have a great night.
Thank you, Paul. We'll sign off now with 73s.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sorry.
We're gonna have a supper. We'll eat some food that's rare.
And at the head of the table, we'll place Brother Henry's chair.
Invite all the local big dogs. We'll laugh and talk and eat. But we'll save the bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat.
Today I'll go to market, buy up a lot of fish.
Well, that will thrill Brother Henry, 'cause fish is his special dish.
Get a large can of molasses.
Have something really sweet. But we'll save the bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. Henry is not a drinker. He rarely takes a nip.
He don't need a napkin,
'cause the things he eats don't drip. Blip.
One day we had a banquet. It really was a bake.
They started off with short ribs, then finished up with steak.
But when the feast was over,
Brother Henry just kept his seat. And we served the bones to Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. Was most proper, right down to demitasse.
From soup to lox and bagels and pheasant under glass.
Class, we thought the chops were mellow.
He said his chops were beat.
Reet, we served the bones to Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. He's Eggman, Henry don't eat no meat. He loves a pullet. Henry don't eat no meat. A vegetarian. Henry?
Come in, Mother.
Soup's on.
That's Johnny Mercer. Save those bones for Henry Jones. Hey, maybe he started the vegetarian craze, you know? David Boyle, the Colorado Radio Collectors Antique Radio Club, thanks so much for being our guest tonight. It was great to chat. See what antique radio is all about out in the Rockies there. Check out their website. It's radioace.com. What a super name for a website, huh? This is a URL you can remember. If you are tired of the ever-increasing digitalization of your life, you have found the right spot. We are the Analog Avengers, This is Tube Talk on WRCA 1330. You can reach the show at tubetalk1@gmail.com. You can find our site at tubetalkclassicradio.org. You know, folks, thanks for tuning in. This is truly the zenith of the independently produced fine radio program. Tell your friends to tune in every Friday night, and friends, do not ever underestimate the strength of a Beam Power audio output tube.
Like the beat, beat, beat of a tom-tom when the jungle shadows fall. Like the tick, tick, tock of the stately clock as it stands against the wall. Like the drip, drip, drip of the raindrop when the summer shower is through. So a voice within me keeps repeating, you, you. Night and day, you are the one. It's only you beneath the moon and under the sun. Whether near to me or far, doesn't matter where you are, I think about you. Night and day, day and night. Why is it so that this longing for you follows wherever I go? In the roaring traffic's boom, in the silence of my lonely room, I think about you. Night and day. Night and day, under the hide of me, there's an oh such a hungry yearning burning inside of me, and its torment won't be through till I spend my life making love to you day and night. Night. Side of me, and its torment won't ever be through till you let me make love to you day and night. Night and day, like the beat, beat, beat of the tom-tom when the jungle shadows fall. I wanna love you.
Well sung, Steve Lawrence. Isn't that snazzy, folks?
My mama done told me, hon, a man's gonna sweet talk and give you the glad eye. But when that sweet talking's done, a man is a two-faced, a worrisome thing who'll leave you to sing the blues in the night. No. Fallen here, the trains are calling. Hoo-ee. My mama done told me, hear that lonesome whistle blowing across the trestle. Hoo-ee. My mama done told me, a hooey da hooey, old pickety clack is echoing back the blues in the night. The evening breeze will start the trees to cry, and the moon will dim its light. When you hear the blues in the night, mark my word, the mockingbird will sing the saddest kind of song. He knows things are wrong, and he's right.
automobile from Memphis to St. Joe, wherever the four winds blow. I've been to some big towns, I've heard me some big talk, but there is one thing I know. A man is a two-faced, a worrisome thing who'll leave you to sing the blues in the night. La, la, my mama done told me there's blues in the night.
That was a very young Dinah Shore, Blues in the Night. Good stuff. You know, the mail has been a little slow here, but I did get a few recent messages. Steve writes in from Nashua, New Hampshire, writes, I enjoyed the music from the 20s. And the Count Basie, a couple of weeks ago, I prefer the interviews with guests in the hobby, though. Well, you know, we'll continue to try to get you some good guests in future discussions. Also heard from Diane in JP, or as we say in Boston, well, as we say in Boston, JP, but it's Jamaica Plain section of the city. Found your show on AM, in the car, on the radio. I love the Bob Newhart. He is one of my favorites. Well, you know, continue to tune in. We hope to please you all. You know, don't forget all the spiffy vintage programming here on WRCA every Friday night. And sometimes you'll find some good music and the stuff on Saturday nights, too. So, you know, you're up late, you're at the bench, working on that set. WRCA can keep you company. Good night, Tubnik Nation. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.